Chapter 19 Shinri 3 Lady Shinri, you ask nothing we ourselves haven't wondered a 10 set times over. Why would the Almighty take my brother now, when times are so difficult in the three houses? Why did he have to be lost in such a way, without even the honor of a battlefield death or failed duel? These are questions of theology, things for monks and stormkeepers to ponder, not women such as ourselves. Our duty is that of consolation and preparation. Now that Prince Tethryn has been taken, we must give strength to those who still live and protect them as best we are able. However, in answer to your specific inquiries, you will soon see that there was little of mysterious note about my brother's death. His convoy did not leave Lachan Ran precipitously at all. Rather, care was taken to depart directly following the 10th Markov high storm, a well-acknowledged day of fortune for sea travels. The trip to Thelena was planned so that each of the more violent high storms could be spent within the shelter of Cove, or port. The events, therefore, of my brother's death are a matter of ill fortune, but not ill planning. During the third day of the open sea voyage to Thelena, one of the ships was struck by a problem with its rudder. I know little of such things, but have included a technical explanation of the problem, as recorded by one of my scribes, who questioned the captain. It was soon obvious that this ship could not reach Thelena in a timely manner. My brother, however, was a man of honor, as you well know, and refused to leave the straggler behind. He determined that the best course was for the entire convoy to wait out the storm and made orders to that effect. Unfortunately, seaborne high storms are a fierce and unpredictable force. It turned out that my brother's flagship, not the ship with the structural problems, was the one that succumbed to the Almighty's winds. The other sailors in the convoy did not, as you implied, simply sail away and leave Prince Tethryn to his maritime grave. They spent days scouring the waves for survivors, picking apart wreckage, and praying to find their prince yet alive. The Almighty, however, granted them no miracle. The sailors were forced to leave the area and sail for port, lest they be caught in yet another storm. I have included copies of testimonies taken from various crew members, as well as copies of the dock registers and docking schedules, both from the port of departure and that of expected arrival. I am confident that studying this evidence will set your heart at ease regarding the tragic events of my brother's demise. I understand your hesitance. You are Vaden at heart, and it is the nature of our people to hope and wish. In this matter, however, you must learn, as I have. Hopes for Tethryn's survival will only prolong the pain of mourning. Lady Shendaran Rinar. Shinri set the letter aside, looking over the accompanying documents. They were, of course, in order. Though the captain's explanation of the ship's difficulties made little sense to her, she had little doubt that it was unimpeachable. The other testimonies were both clear and consistent. It was, of course, all fabricated. Shinri sat for a quiet moment. Evidence spread before her on one of Lady Yasna's sitting-room tables. The letter was exaggeratedly defensive, the evidence was too abundant and too freely offered. Shendaran was far too quick to assure that the death lacked mysterious elements, especially considering all the questions she chose not to answer. Why would Tethryn endanger an entire convoy for one ship? Why didn't he move the crew from the beleaguered vessel to another ship, then sail safely to port? Did Shendaran really have so low an opinion of Shinri's political skills that she would use such obvious tactics? Did she not realize that her quick assurances that nothing was wrong would only provoke Shinri toward unwanted conclusions? Shinri reread the letter, and as she did so, an awareness grew within her. Shandaran wasn't trying to be obvious. To most women in Vaidenar, such a letter would be considered an adequate response. Shinri, however, had been trained by a far better master. Even as she read, Yasna's lessons poked at her mind. This word was misplaced, that assurance offered too hastily. The text was like a puzzle with irregular pieces. Any one of the clues by itself was unremarkable. However, the whole, when arranged correctly, displayed a picture. Shandaran was hiding things. She herself didn't know the details of her brother's death, and she was trying very hard to cover up that ignorance. Yasna really is good at this, Shinri realized. Her training has become so innate to me that I can easily deconstruct the intentions of one of Vaidenar's most prestigious politicians. Shinri knew about Yasna's skill, of course. One did not live with the Lady Yasna Kolin for 3 years and not learn to admire her genius. However, Shinri had always been involved in plots that did not directly concern her. Lady Yasna's goals, Lady Yasna's will. It was a different thing entirely for Shinri to see Yasna's hand manifest in Shinri's own goals. But what does it mean? Shinri thought. You never did like me much, Shandaran. Never did forgive the little girl who jealously ruined your sitting party by running through in a mud-drenched dress. Is that why you lie to me now, out of simple spite? Shinri idly pulled at the edges of the fine, scented paper, ripping off circular pieces as she thought. Shandaran didn't like her, true, but the elements contained in the letter were too extensive to have been fabricated for one woman. This was a response that had been given before, probably to both political rivals and allies. House Rhaenar wanted it known that Tethryn's death had been an unfortunate accident, and nothing more. That meant they didn't want people poking too closely at the events of the convoy's loss. But why? Ignorance was not so grievous a sin that it would inspire such a cover-up. True, all houses had things they wished to hide from their rivals, but it would require something of direct relevance to force such extremes. The convoy's cargo? The transportation of delicate materials would explain the quick cover-up. It would also explain why the cargo had been transported by ship, rather than through the oath gates, though the official explanation was the avoidance of Aleth tariffs. However, if the cargo were the secret, what of Tethryn? Was his death a simple accident, as stated, unrelated to the cover-up? Perhaps there had been a mutiny. Rumors of a prince of the three houses being killed by common citizens could be dangerous to morale. Yakaved was organized far more martially than Alethkar, and such a loss of command would be a grave embarrassment to House Rhaenar. What if one ship's crew had taken the prince captive, then been sunk by the rest of the convoy? Shinri shook her head at the extravagant speculation. She didn't have enough information to begin imagining complex mutinies or deep cover-ups. She had only a small set of lies, perhaps just cosmetic in nature. Though Lady Yasna was capable of making wild logical connections with very little information, Shinri didn't have her experience or intuition. Shinri would have to dig further, as she had been taught. Write to Rhaenar's political rivals, sniff for rumors regarding the convoy, see if Tethryn had made any odd alliances or enemies during the last 6 months. It would take time, but it felt strangely invigorating. Shinri rolled up her scraps of torn paper, idly flicking them across the room. She had worried about purpose. Well, She might not have the passion for intrigue that Lady Jasnah boasted, but at least she was beginning to discover her own political goals. She no longer felt the powerful loss of Tethryn's death. It had become more the latent ache of a promise unfulfilled, a pathway unexplored. However, searching out the truth of his death felt right to her. She would never serve as his scribe and wife, seeing to his political interests, but she could give him this one last offering. "I should have been more suspicious," Shinri realized with amusement. "I would have thought that living this long with Jasnah would have made me paranoid, too." It had taken the questions of a madman to spur her curiosity. Yet for that questioning, she found herself strangely indebted to the man who called himself Talanel the Herald. The door opened, and Jasnah swept into the room, perfect in bearing, beauty, and poise. Shinri flicked a wad of paper, then hurriedly replaced her left sleeve and put her hands in her lap. If Jasnah noticed, she said nothing. Kemnar and Nalshendan entered the room after their mistress. The two guards were often with her now, kept close and involved in protecting the crown. "What is that?" Jasnah asked, waving toward Shinri's stack of papers.
"Nothing, my lady," Shinri said, folding the letters. "Simply another list of condolences sent regarding the prince's death."
Jasnah nodded. "See that you answer them all respectfully, Shinri. Your wardship will end soon, and you will need allies in order to make another union for yourself." Shinri nodded.
"I'm sorry, Jasnah," she thought. "But if you knew the truth, my investigation would become yours instead. You do not become involved unless you can control. Tethryn was my fiancé. I will find out what happened to him."
Letters of condolence made a good excuse. They were something Jasnah would understand and encourage, for they saw the prince's death in the same way that Jasnah did, as a political inconvenience, to be smoothed like any other bump in one's plans. Jasnah herself had offered little in the way of sympathy. In this, despite their years together, Shinri knew that she and Jasnah would never understand one another. Love, romantic love, was something Shinri doubted that Jasnah would ever be able to comprehend. Jasnah would encourage discovering House Rinar's secrets for political gain or even to sate curiosity, but she wouldn't understand doing so out of duty to a man one had loved. And Shinri had loved Tethryn, even if the emotion had been that of a foolish young girl. Shinri glanced up, unconsciously seeking Nalshendan. There he stood, eyes plain, with the sincerity of an honest and honorable man. He stood in his place, waiting beside Jasnah's chair, a position he bore not just out of duty, but out of love as well. Sometimes, seeing the pain in his eyes was too much for Shinri to endure, and she had to flee. Jasnah ignored the man, as usual. She conferred quietly with Kemnar, whom she'd always found more useful. Though there was nothing between them, of course. Kemnar was far more like Jasnah, devious, capable of compromise, and efficient. However, he was fond of common women, the citizens he met in bars or on the street. The two schemed, while Nalshendan stood slightly apart, wishing he could find a way to earn Jasnah's respect and love, but knowing somehow that no matter what he did, he would only find her disapproval. Shinri knew that feeling well.
"Shinri," Jasnah suddenly said, "I need you." "Yes, my lady," Shinri said, tucking her letters into her left sleeve pocket and rising to join her mistress.
"What do you know of recent events in your homeland?" Jasnah asked.
"Very little, I'm afraid, my lady," Shinri said. "I have been busy with events here in Alethkar."
Jasnah frowned. Kemnar informs me that times are tempestuous in the Three Houses.
Times are always tempestuous in the Three Houses, my lady, Shinri replied.
But Kemnar is correct. From what I've heard, recent events are even more troubling than usual. My far cousin has raised an army against his kinsmen. While it wouldn't be the first time one house took arms up against another, it does appear that this might be more than the typical border dispute or retribution for a caravan raid.
Jasnah glanced at Kemnar, then sighed.
I can't watch everyone in every kingdom, she said, in an almost grumbling voice. But a war on our southern border is hardly something that can be ignored. Shinri, perhaps you should deliver your responses to those letters in person. The implication was clear. Shinri was to visit her contacts in Vaden City and gather what intelligence she could. The command was not unwelcome. The Renar cover-up was likely linked to the constant struggles between the Three Houses. Perhaps she could serve multiple purposes with a single visit.
Yes, my lady, Shinri said. It has been too long since I last paid my respects to King Arvin, anyway. I should have visited long before.
Jasnah nodded, waving her away and immediately moving on to other plots. The idiot king sat pleasantly upon his throne. He nodded happily at those who approached him and bowed to pay their respects. His clothing matched his smile, rich, yet somehow lacking regality. Matched with the man's vapid eyes and innocent smile, the bright clothing seemed childishly gaudy, a waste of coin and silk. Arvin obviously knew nothing of his looming death. It hadn't taken Shinri much time to assess the situation, though her contact with her homeland had been sparse during the last few years. The Vadens were a far more open people than their Aleth cousins. In addition, news of Tal Shekh's approach was hardly a secret topic. Her distant cousin had finally gathered the forces and the courage to march on Vaden City. He came to conquer. Soon a new house would sit on the throne. It had only been a matter of time. House Vadenel had allowed itself to grow too weak, a disease manifest by its figurehead of a king. Poor decisions, a lax military, and fallen trade contracts had left the once virile house with barely enough power to maintain the city, let alone its armies. Though forces were being gathered, allies being called upon, it was highly unlikely that House Vadenel would be able to raise an army large enough to resist the conqueror.
Well, Shinri thought, at least it will be a relatively quick coup. Vadenel has to stand here. The city is by far its most secure refuge. Those who wish to fight will die quickly, and those with less honor will bow to the new king.
The nobility were not ignorant of this choice. The Vaden noblemen stood stiffly, speaking in the quiet tones of nervous men. Those with enough influence, or who were not too closely related to the royal line, had already fled the capital to seek respite on their own lands. Those who remained would either have to risk standing with the king, fighting a battle that they were unlikely to win, or they would have to side with Tal Shekh and hope that the new king didn't decide they had been too closely connected to the king to be left alive. Most probably wouldn't make that final decision for several days yet. They were waiting to see if the Lord Puppeteer managed to gather a suitable resistance or not. The Vadens were a martial people, but they didn't hold strictly to Aleth ideals of honor. Few battlefield warriors saw any good in fighting a far superior foe, and the Vaden men would react similarly when the time came. The only ones whose doom was absolutely certain were those whose power was directly related to that of the king. The Lord Puppeteer, notably,
was absent from the ball. Shinri smiled, waving a servant to refill her wine. The puppeteer was undoubtedly very busy seeking allies and planning for the battle. He had no wife or daughter, and was even reported to distrust women politicians, a sentiment that would hurt him severely. But his misfortune was hardly a reason for grief. Shinri had never much cared for Karathach, or the king he controlled. Of course, her impressions had been formed during her childhood, when she had not been known for her rational assessment of personalities. Still, it struck her as poetic that the puppeteer should fall with barely a whimper after flaunting his power so blatantly. She did feel a measure of sympathy for her poor, mindless king. Inside Shinri's mind, however, Yasna's imposed rationality whispered that the kingdom would prosper far more under Talshech's reign. She strolled across the feast chamber. She was surprised at how refreshing she found it to return to Vaden courtly ideals. Or perhaps the refreshment simply came from escaping Aleth austerity. Either way, the Vadens were far more lax than their northern cousins. Instead of sitting primly at tables, the women stood near grand serving tables, mingling and holding small bowls of food. They discussed politics openly, rather than sending clandestine missives to dart between tables, and did so unabashedly within the hearing of men. Some of the groups even intermixed as they ate, speaking openly together. Even with the extreme tension of an approaching army, their interactions were far more relaxed than what Shinri had grown accustomed to. She chose a group of women sprinkled with ladies of power, yet not too closely kinned to the royal line, and approached with a slow gait, selecting small pieces of sliced fruit from the dining table and placing them in her bowl. She wasn't really very hungry, but the fruit plates had been arranged so precisely and carefully that it was difficult to resist plucking slices from their patterns, if only to break them up a bit. The small group of women noticed her approach and immediately made room for her. Shinri held in her smile of pleasure. Her surname did not go unnoticed in Vaidenar these days. Though her relationship to Talshech Davar was relatively distant, she was still of his line. Too far removed to make a good hostage, but not so far removed that she wouldn't make a decent ally in the impending months. The power gave her an unexpected edge, one she hadn't enjoyed since the height of Yasna's courtly influence back in Alethkar. Yet this power was far superior, for it was actually Shinri's, and not just another facet of Yasna's competence. "Lady Shinri Davar," said one of the women, bowing her head. She was Lady Khalsa Yavan, a fourth lady, and far too important to normally have bothered with a simple ward such as Shinri. "Yes," Shinri thought, bowing back, but not showing as much deference as she should have. "I could grow accustomed to influence like this. Perhaps that is what draws Yasna to politics." "We are graced by your unexpected visit, Lady Davar," Khalsa continued. "Yes, Khalsa, we all heard my surname the first time. Thank you." "It is I who am graced, Lady Khalsa," Shinri replied. "I have been away from the Vaden court for such a long time that I feared a cold reception." "Never for you, Lady Shinri," said another lady, Tamanan Iavan, Khalsa's distant cousin. Shinri smiled, with closed lips. "Thank you for the welcome. Though I must admit surprise at finding the city so fortified with soldiers."
"Oh, it is not so defensible as one might think," Tamanan said quickly, obviously hoping Shinri would somehow relay the information and its source back to Talshech. Loyal allies to the king are strangely difficult to find. A most unpleasant state, I must say.
Loyalty is always most strongly tested during times of strife, Shinri said. I'm sure the king's supporters will prove sufficient from their strength of heart, if nothing else.
Indeed, Khalsa said. She was obviously the craftier of the two. Perhaps 50 years in age, her feminine braids were subdued and streaked with grey, though the men preferred costumes far more simply cut than their Aleth counterparts. The women's dresses were virtually indistinguishable from northern designs.
Of course, Shinri noted idly, the king's obvious success does not preclude us from discussing other outcomes for reasons of entertainment.
Purely for logical enjoyment, Khalsa agreed. It was a flimsy excuse. However, Shinri suspected that it would compare rather soundly to the 10 sets of similar excuses being given by other ball-goers. Few of the king's more vital supporters had chosen to attend this particular function, and the puppeteer was in no position to begin alienating the numerous fence-sitters by striking against those who discussed his fall. Ironically, treason was about as easy to discuss as the next high storm.
I wonder, Shinri said, popping a Rochefruit slice in her mouth. What do you think of my cousin's ridiculous aspirations? If he is temeritous enough to march against the king, might he be foolish enough to move on to other interests as well?
Khalsa's eyes narrowed. Shinri placed her in a difficult position. The woman had to decide if she were speaking to Yasna's ward or Tal Shekh's cousin.
I doubt he will look northward, Khalsa finally said. Your cousin is an ambitious man, not an undesirable trait in a leader. However, the Aleth border is too strong to penetrate, and King Elokar's armies are still gathered from his campaign in Prala.
Are they not?
Indeed, Shinri agreed.
The treaty with Alethkar has been very favorable, said the final woman, Vedmakan Gentil. Short, with blondish southern hair, the woman was the least powerful in the group. She would hold her tongue for most of the conversation.
Khalsa nodded. I doubt Tal Shekh would risk endangering trade with the north to start a war that he would be unlikely to win. I have this information from reliable sources. You may relate it with confidence.
Ah, so you choose Shinri the ward after all, Shinri noted. Well played. Not that Khalsa didn't hope to gain influence from the conversation. She had given Shinri a potential gem of information and would expect a well-spoken word or two in return. Most of the evening's conversation had been along similar lines. Kemnar's worry about Vedanar was unfounded. There was unrest, true, but the idiot king would fall quickly. Tal Shekh's ambition would stop there. He couldn't begin a march northward, not with the Searing coming and the Aleth borders so well patrolled. Once he took the throne, he would have to expend effort to secure his reign, not to mention be wary of yet another Lachan Ran revolt. Alethkar was safe for at least a few years. And that meant that Shinri had time to probe a few other questions.
I appreciate your candor, Lady Khalsa, Shinri said. You appear to have enviable contacts.
Khalsa smiled. Some prepare better than others.
Indeed, my contacts in Vedanar are unenviable these days, especially considering recent losses.
Prince Tethryn's death was a tragedy for the entire kingdom, Khalsa said smoothly. The smile in her eye was almost gleeful. She knew something, but she wasn't about to share it.
So, Shinri thought with dissatisfaction, the coin of my surname is that easily expended? There was something else in Khalsa's face. Vengefulness? Shinri frowned, trying to remember if, as a child, she'd ever thrown anything at the woman. Unfortunately, by pure odds of probability, the chances were not in Shinri's favor. Lady Temanan frowned slightly.
Prince Tethryn? She asked. Indeed, to lose him, and in such a way.
Khalsa paled almost imperceptibly as Temanan spoke, and Shinri sprang before the senior woman could deflect the conversation.
In which way is that? Shinri asked.
Why, Temanan said, flushing slightly. You know, that way, to one of them. I would never travel with one myself, and all the way to Thalina.
Ah, yes, Shinri said quickly.
There was only one them in Vaden society.
I warned him not to take an awakener with him on the ship.
Khalsa frowned in dissatisfaction, studying Shinri's face, obviously trying to determine the extent of Shinri's bluff. In this area, however, she was outmatched. One of them had been trained by Lady Yasna Kolin, and the other had not.
Terrible indeed, Shinri said, to prompt Temanan.
Her mind, however, buzzed.
An awakener? On the ship?
It was unlikely. Tethryn had been a pious Vorin, but, like most Vadens, he had been deeply superstitious. He would never have traveled on the same ship as an awakener.
Temanan leaned closer. I heard the creature went completely mad, she whispered. As they often do, you know. It made the waters around its own ship burn, and the vessel was immolated completely. That's why all hands were lost. They say the things can't hurt a person directly, but if they turn the boat around you into stone, your own immunity won't do much good, eh?
Cousin? Khalsa said.
This is her former betrothed you speak of. Mind your tongue.
Temanan flushed, but the damage had been done.
Perhaps it is you who should mind your tongue, Khalsa, Shinri noted. If you want to keep a secret, you probably shouldn't tell it to your weak-minded cousin.
I think I will withdraw, ladies,
Shinri said, bowing slightly and adopting a slightly ill look. Let them think that talk of Tethryn had left her morose. Perhaps they would be afraid enough of losing favor with her that they would volunteer more information at another date. She bid her other farewells as quickly as propriety allowed. She made a few subtle inquiries as she did so. Now that she had some information she could tease, getting others to volunteer what they knew in the hopes that she would be able to add something more was easier. She spent little time at it, but that little was enough. Those who had decent connections knew the same story. Tethryn had been transporting an awakener to Thalina. The Thalan king's fascination with awakeners and their arts was well known. The sale of a kingdom's awakener was strictly forbidden by the way of kings, as was the treatment of any person like a commodity, but it often happened anyway. King Amelin of Thalina would have paid richly indeed for an awakener. He probably would have even given Tethryn a sizable amount of the creature's awakening profits. Shinri knew Amelin, and the stories were true. He kept awakeners because of the novelty of their power, as much as for the wealth they could bring. Trading him one would have been a masterful deal. However, Shinri knew it never could have happened. Tethryn believed too strongly in Shenares to do such a thing. Beyond that, he loathed awakeners. He had always cringed when someone told him a material had been awakened, and never even wanted to discuss the topic of awakeners. He would not have brought one on his ship. He wouldn't have even brought one in the same convoy. No matter what his father or brothers demanded, Tethryn would have had nothing to do with such a deal. Suddenly, Shinri felt a sharp blush of embarrassment. She was not so clever as she had thought. She had assumed that Lady Shendaran, Tethryn's sister, was simply her political inferior. Shinri had seen through the letter so easily, noticing its flaws and hidden content, all the while congratulating herself on her superior political savvy, and all the while being manipulated to do just that. Shendaran had expected her to dig. She had prepared for Shinri's suspicion and had known that Shinri was unlikely to accept any explanation from House Rhaenar. This, the story about the Awakener, this was the true feint. This was the story spread unofficially, the patch used to underlay an obviously suspicious event. It was a very Vaden scandal. Shinri's people loved stories of poetic destruction via awakening or stormshade. They would quickly accept the second lie for its shameful and supernatural implications, especially if House Rhaenar was smart enough to deny it as much as possible. But it was a lie. Shendaran didn't know two things. Shinri had known Tethryn a relatively short time, but she had studied him with the obsessive eyes of a love-struck girl. She knew far more of him than she was expected to. Secondly, Shinri was no longer really a Vaden. She had spent too much time in Alethkar, and with the supremely Aleth Yasna, to retain many of her superstitions. She didn't accept the Awakener story because of its illogic. And that, unfortunately, left her where she had begun, save for one bit of information. She now understood that she wouldn't find her answers in Yakeved. The Vaden people couldn't be honest with her, even if they wished to. The lies had grown too convoluted. But what else is there? She thought. If I can't get the truth from them, then how do I discover it? What would Yasna do? The answer came to her immediately. Since Shinri couldn't find the answer at the source of Tethryn's voyage, she would have to go to his destination. King Amalyn probably didn't remember Shinri, and she doubted she wanted him to, for she hadn't exactly treated him with the dignity deserving of his situation. However, Thelena had dock registers and cargo masters. Perhaps she could borrow Kemnar for a short time and have him seek out the truth behind that convoy's cargo. Determined, Shinri left the mansion and ordered her litter-bearers to carry her to Vaden City's Oathgate Dome. Like the others, it was structured like a reverse fortress, designed to protect against the unlikely event of unwanted travelers coming through. There was no line. It was late in the day, and the oath gates were closed to all but the most important of travelers. Her bearers put down the litter, and she swept into the building, intent on returning to Yasna with her news of Vaden politics. The guards waved her inside, into the circular room lined with glistening quartz and bright diamonds. The oath gate itself was a twisting structure of pure quartz, designed like a natural arch of stone blown into formation by the winds. And it was already open. Shinri paused. She had expected that she would need to demand the services of the young Awakener kept on premises to open their side and send a message through the opal requesting that the other side be opened as well. However, it appeared as if another traveler had already demanded its opening. As she watched, the white smoke veil in the arch's center broke, and a man stepped through. Round-faced, with the large, almost childlike eyes of his kind, the Shin man moved with more grace than the smoke itself. He crept more than walked, his step almost a glide. Shinri stepped back, staring despite herself as the man strode by. He glanced at Shinri with eyes that read her as easily as they read a common glyph, and understood her with an ease that would have shamed even Yasna's skill. He was out the door seconds later, passing her without acknowledgement or respect for her station, leaving her to wonder how a foreign man could demand such free use of the oath gates.